Welcome to the Feminine Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, talking about everything in between, a little bit of femme, and a little bit of EM. This is Risa E. Lewis, host for the Feminine Podcast. We're doing a journal club today. We're going to be speaking about a special article. We're recording live from London, England, UK. Three authors of this article have graciously decided to join me. I'm going to pass the microphone, so to speak, and have each author introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Tessa Davis. I'm a paediatric emergency consultant at the Royal London Hospital.
Hi, I'm Grace Lear. I'm a paediatric registrar at Sydney Children's Hospital.
And hi, I'm Danny Hall, a paediatric emergency consultant at both the Evelina London and Crumlin Children's Hospital in Dublin.
So, thank you, authors. The article we're discussing today is Women and Children First: Gender Equity in Pediatric Medicine. This was accepted for publication in the Archives of Diseases of Childhood 2019. And there are a few other authors that are not joining us for the discussion, but we will give them props in the show notes. And audience, you know how much I love talking about the show notes. So first of all, I'm going to pass the microphone to Tess Davis. Tessa is the first author for this article. Tessa, tell us about the impetus for writing of this article, and was anything about it surprising?
So I think the first thing that brought us to it was looking at gender equity in speakers at conferences, because we think about that a lot because we run the Don't Forget the Bubbles conference each year. And for us, it's important to make sure that there is gender equity in speakers. But I think a few of us noticed going to other conferences that it didn't feel that way. And so we actually did a paper before this one looking at the gender division at different conferences, and that was a paper with some of these authors and also with Natalie May, who's part of St Emlyn's. And from that, this led on to looking at the broader issue. So we can see that there's an imbalance in conferences. Is there an imbalance in other areas of paediatrics as well? Particularly as we know that paediatrics, or we felt before we actually looked at the data, that it was likely that paediatrics is a female-heavy specialty. So does that follow through, and is that represented in other areas of academia and conferences on college boards?
Audience, I'm going to give you the bottom line of this article, and I read directly. In spite of the roughly 50% split in gender among pediatric consultants, our college boards are predominantly male. In fact, what is reported in this article, it's not just that the consultants, but also the leadership. So when we think about pediatrics, whether it's in the UK, whether it's in the United States, whether it's Australia, we know that this is predominantly women. However, we're not seeing this pattern, or consistently we're seeing this pattern of women are very present, but they're not getting to the top. They're not getting to the point of leadership. Grace, what are your thoughts on what was found in the paper?
So I think it's interesting to think about how we can encourage more women leaders. As you mentioned, even though consultants represent about 50 to 60%, trainees are an even greater percentage female. So around 74, 77% of Australian, UK and American trainees are female in pediatrics. So I found it most interesting being able to reach out to other voices among Foam Ed, including Esther Chu, Dara Cass, and female leaders to think about what can we actually do to change this. So things like building diversity, being aware of bias, mentorship, but particularly sponsorship and the role that women and men can both play in encouraging a more diverse workforce for better outcomes for everyone.
Danny, what was your favorite part of writing this piece?
I've got a particular interest in education and training. And so I have to say it was quite startling when I looked at the percentages and the numbers of trainees in pediatrics and in other specialties. And as Grace has already said, the pediatric training population internationally is predominantly female, at around 3/4. But if you look then at other specialties, they're much less female heavy than pediatrics. So we asked ourselves, you know, why is this the case? And one of the things that we thought is that actually it's a family friendly specialty. There's a lot of flexibility in training in pediatrics. And so we looked, for example, in the UK, where pediatrics of all training specialties has the highest proportion of less than full time trainees in both female and male compared to things like surgery and general practice. So one of the things that we were looking at then is if you have so many pediatric trainees who are female and potentially working less than full time, How can we encourage better gender equity in terms of returning to practice after things like maternity leave or parental leave? And we came up with a few solutions looking at the literature available to us. There are some things, some fantastic return to clinical practice programs out there. There are some excellent mentoring programs. And so we were suggesting that actually maybe this is a solution that different training schools can take to really encourage females who are in pediatrics to ensure that they progress at the same rate as their male counterparts.
I'll ask each of you, we'll go around, is there something that based on the results of this paper you now have implemented personally to help amplify other women or to help sponsor, mentor other women, like anything specific that you can share?
So one of the things for me that kind of most bothered me or motivated me about this was looking at female representation on college boards. And I think it would be fair to say across the board that we are not well represented on college boards, and that's looking internationally. It's not just in the UK or in Australia, and it's also not just in paediatrics. And I feel that it's important for us to try and effect change in that. So personally, I do now kind of call out colleges when I see them kind of tweeting photos or posting things on social media of their boards that are clearly not gender diverse, just to kind of, not in an aggressive way, but to try and draw attention to that.
And when you say colleges, is that the equivalent of what we'd say like our board, like the American Board of Emergency Medicine?
Yeah, that's right. So your American Board of Emergency Medicine, here in the UK, we've got the Royal College for Paediatrics and Child Health. It's the Royal Australasian College of Physicians in Australia. When you look at who makes up their board, you're looking at about a third or less on average are female, in spite of the fact that we represent a much larger percentage of the paediatric workforce. And so it's how we can make that change, how we can start to improve that. And some of the colleges are making, you know, recognise this and are making good efforts in that way. And I think we have a role to play as members of the colleges as well to say that actually we do notice that and we do support it being changed.
So for me, being involved particularly with Speakalyze and with Don't Forget the Bubbles, the thing that I found interesting is that with the conference speakers, when we're comparing 6 or 7 major international pediatric conferences, the representation of women ranged from 25% of speakers to 65%. But the keynotes, 67% were male. So that means that even though we may be seeing a reasonable number of women speaking at conferences, they're not necessarily getting those keynote positions. And we have to then ask ourselves, why is it? Does that mean that the women speakers are less qualified? Or is it because the people who are organizing the conferences haven't become attuned to this sort of level of diversity and representation, and how we can have unconscious biases that mean that we don't represent fairly and diversely?
And for me, it's very similar. So one of my other roles is to organise the paediatric emergency medicine streams at the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health and the Royal College of Emergency Medicine conferences. And I have to say, before writing this article, it wasn't something that I particularly paid attention to, but actually since the article and since all the work that we've done in terms of looking at some of the appalling statistics, it's certainly something that I completely take on board now, and I'm organising the conference streams, making sure that if there are two speakers who are both would be both perfect for a particular talk, I look across the whole programme to see how many other women and how many other men, and then make sure that I'm equitable and representative in the speaker lineup.
I think the impact of this article cannot be underestimated, because when I finished training in 2001, I thought there are two specialties that have moved toward, and I actually thought had achieved equity, and that was pediatrics and psychiatry. And the sobering aspect of this piece is basically almost 20 years later, we're actually not the equity that we think we are in a field that is predominantly women. And it's very sobering. And when you have data, when you have numbers, that is what inspires people to change. And I think these numbers and this article is something that people are going to utilize to help establish change, not just in the UK, not just in Australia, but also in the United States. So we're all here at Don't Forget the Bubbles. This is my first time participating. Thank you for allowing me to participate in the ultrasound workshop today. It was a huge success. Some of the audience may not be familiar with Don't Forget the Bubbles. So for those who aren't, why don't you give them a little bit of a teaser, an appetizer that's going to inspire them to go to the website, listen to your podcast, watch the lectures.
So Don't Forget the Bubbles is a pediatric free form website. So we produce two or three posts every week. That's a mix of clinical topics, summaries of recent research papers, sharing talks from our previous conference. The conference we run each year, this one starting tomorrow, for the main conference starting tomorrow, is the third time we've run it, and it's an acute pediatric conference with lots of great speakers presenting new research, presenting personal stories. So it's a mix of hard science, hard research, and reflection on non-clinical aspects. We are recording all the talks and they get released on the website throughout the year for free.
So I really see you Don't Forget the Bubbles as a community of people all across Twitter and FOMED who are interested in learning how to improve care for children, for their patients, and becoming better doctors, nurses, and paramedics. It's a great source of inspiration for me. I love coming to the conference each year, meeting new friends, learning new ideas that I can then take home to my day-to-day practice. I think the other key tenet of Don't Forget the Bubbles is looking at moving into knowledge translation and knowledge dissemination. How can we cut down that time from publication of research to actual clinical practice and implementation? So an example that we're really proud of is with the recent Concept and Eclipse studies that came out, we were able to publish a blog post with a hot take as well as an infographic within an hour of the Lancet publishing, and we had 4,000 hits within the first 24 hours. So I think Don't Forget the Bubbles is innovative. It's at the forefront of medical education. So please watch this space.
We love lingo. What exactly is a hot take?
So a hot take to me is that when we look at a paper and we find some initial impressions, as opposed to possibly a cold take where you've had more time to percolate and discuss and debate about it and refine your opinion. So I think a hot take's quite useful because it can raise awareness for an article, spark some conversation. And what was really great is we had this initial blog post that was written up, but then the conversation moved on to Twitter and people started discussing the merits and the finer points of the details. And we even got the authors a little bit involved, and they've since written a commentary on our commentary of their paper. So I think that this is a evolving field, that when you publish research, it's no longer stuck in a journal, stuck in a musty library somewhere, but it's evolving understanding and communication about what that means. What did they include, but also what did the researchers not include in the journal study can be really important and informative for how we interpret the data.
There are certain conferences that have a cult following and certain talks that then go viral on social media. So we can talk about TED Med, we could talk about SMAC, and we could talk about Don't Forget the Bubbles. For those, don't forget the...
We totally should have a Don't Forget the Bible. We could do that next year. It's a niche market, but full med means religion, I like it.
Don't forget the Bible, don't forget the Bubbles. If there are listeners that are part of your cult following, how can they potentially get involved? What's the best way to get involved?
I love the idea that we have a cult following. I'm not sure that's true, but thank you, Rita. How can people get involved? Well, we're always looking for people to get involved. Our team has grown rapidly over the last 6 months, so we have plenty of teams looking for members. So whether you're interested in design and media, whether you're interested in writing blog posts, whether you're interested in developing new streams of education or helping with the conference, we welcome everyone who has enthusiasm for creating good quality pediatric educational resources. So you can email us through the website anytime.
Fantastic. And again, audience, show notes. It'll all be in the show notes. So I'm going to bring our amazing conversation to a close. Again, express thanks for taking time, your graciousness at the end of long day and actually months of preparation for what's about to launch as a banner conference in London. To close it out, I'd like each of you to one more time go around, say who you are, and say an aspect of this article that should motivate change for many of our he for she's, a lot of our male followers.
So I'm Danny Hall, and I'm a consultant in pediatric emergency medicine. And for me, it's about really knowing that women need to be represented on college boards and on conferences, and that we need to put in place ways that we can help facilitate this.
So I'm Grace Lear. I'm a PEDS registrar from Sydney Children's Hospital. The take home, I guess, specific for he for she would be something that we just saw in this podcast, which is that Andy Tagg stepped back and nominated the three of us to speak in this interview. I think that sometimes it can be challenging when you're given opportunities to not say yes all the time. But I think it's worthwhile that if you see that it's a man, or if you see that it's an all-male cast or colleague, consider sponsoring a female colleague who you think might be willing to take your place and do a fantastic job and represent diverse teams.
Hi, I'm Tessa Davis. I'm a paediatric emergency medicine consultant at the Royal London Hospital. I agree with Grace's point. I think if you are a male speaker who's invited to speak at a conference, and you have a look at the programme and see that women are not being reasonably represented, you don't even need to decline the offer. It's not that you have to boycott it or anything, but you should be saying, actually, have you looked at your gender balance? And I do that as well when I'm invited to conferences, so I say yes, I'll go and speak, but I always do now say to the organisers, you know, next time you could think about looking at your gender balance more. And often they haven't thought about it and haven't looked at it. It's not due to any ill will. And I think just mentioning that and making people who are making the big decisions, just making them aware that actually it is important to the people below them, or, you know, people junior to them, that will start to change things.
Three excellent pearls. So audience, I'll talk to you soon, and thank you again.